everybody. Welcome to the Ann and After Show. We've got a special episode this week. I know there was a new episode of Attack on Titan, but we're actually going to be talking all about Jujutsu Kaisen Zero, the film that is opening in theaters this Friday. Tickets are already on sale. If you're a fan of JJK, like we all are, you're going to want to see it. So that's what we're going to be talking about mostly today. We will be very light on spoilers. We're not going to spoil the ending or anything, you know, you haven't seen yet. We're mostly just going to be talking about like our favorite moments. And I've got some insight from reading the manga that I'll talk about because there are some differences that are kind of interesting and some things that don't make it into the film. But before we talk about that, I'd like to remind everyone to please subscribe to this channel. We're on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. We've got stuff going on Instagram afterwards. But if you want to be here live, you want to be here on YouTube at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and hit the notification bell and give us likes on Facebook and share us with your friends and all that. So and
keep in mind that daylight savings time, because I definitely didn't. And it made for a rough morning.
I'm exhausted.
No. Shoot.
Once again, I'm cursing American farmers.
Around. Exactly. Every time it comes around, I'm like, why though? Why are you doing us like this?
But yeah. Yeah. Arizona farmers. Doesn't do it anymore. Everyone else except Arizona has opted out. So they just get to have their normal sleep schedule all year instead of this back and forth crap that we do. So yes, I'm a little sleepy. Forgive me if I'm out of it a little more than usual, because I definitely felt that lost hour of sleep with two kids on a Sunday night. Not fun at all. Okay, but JJK Zero. So just the quick intro. This is a prequel. Manga is a prequel. The movie is a prequel. Movie maybe more so even than the manga. The manga came out first. It ran in a monthly magazine called Shonen Giga, which is I don't actually think exists anymore. I think that manga went under. But at the time in 2017, that's where this ran. And it ran from April to July. And it was so popular that the creator came back to work within the same framework to create the series that we now know and love in Weekly Shonen Jump. So a lot of the world building is more or less the same. I still don't understand how all of it works. Haven't since I watched the anime. Like, there's shields and power-ups and all kinds of stuff that I'm still a little iffy on. But the main awesome point of it is it's got really good monsters in the forms of the curses that we get to see in it. And we've got a cast of characters that are hard not to love. I love all of them. They're all good kids. But this one doesn't have the full cast that we're used to. We have a different lead character. And then we also have Panda is still there. Maki is still there. And Inumaki is still there. And of course, Gojo. Because, I mean, what would Jujutsu Kaisen be without Gojo? But otherwise, it's mostly a completely unique, focused story on this boy named Yuta. James, do you want to tell us a little bit about Yuta? What's his deal?
Yeah, Yuta's had a great time. He's actually, in a lot of ways, it's weird because he has a lot in common with Yuji, but he also has a lot of differences. So like our boy Yuji, that we know and love from the main series, he also is bound to a kind of malevolent curse, except instead of being the curse of like the all-time world's biggest douchebag demon guy, this curse is actually his childhood friend, Rika. And for years, the spooky, scary monster version of his dead childhood friend has basically haunted him and viciously attacked. I can't remember. Did she kill his bullies or did she just maim them?
No, she maims them, but it's like, I don't know how they survived that.
They're right, because she stuffed them in a locker.
You know the one thing? I mean, and they weren't like, oh, that hurts. Like, it was like just flesh. It was just broken bone flesh.
It's gnarly. It's all gnarly. Like, there's a lot of gore and stuff in this. Taylor in the comments wants to know if he needs to have seen the anime before watching this movie. No, actually, you don't.
100% no.
You can go into this movie having seen none of the Jujutsu Kaisen series or have read any of the manga. There's maybe some little tidbits that you might get more appreciation out of if you're familiar with the characters from the series, but they're small and they're not super necessary to the plot. So you can definitely just go see this movie without having done that. But James, you were saying, so Yuta, you know, he's cursed by his dead childhood friend, Rika.
Yeah,
terrifying.
Yes, to the point where he's actually tried to kill himself because he feels so bad about all of the havoc that Rika just wreaks upon the people around him. But the one time he tried to stab himself, Rika turned his knife into a pretzel. And so that didn't work. And of course, with that powerful and dangerous of a curse, he got the attention of Gojo and the elders at I always forget the full name of the actual high school. It's the Tokyo Prefectural Jujutsu High School.
And, yeah, it's some long title. I was just trying to think too.
But the elders are basically like, oh, we got to kill this kid, because that seems to be their number. That's their go-to. Is, oh, this kid's got dangerous curse stuff going on. Let's murder him.
That's funny. Like, I didn't realize that until you just said that. And I was tried to do to Itadori too, right?
They're like, I ate a bad finger, and now we got to kill him.
We could just kill him.
This kid didn't even ask. He didn't even get a finger. You know, this wasn't even like a... Anyway. But of course, Gojo is Gojo, and he does not want to murder this depressed and traumatized young boy. So instead, he takes him under his wing. And much, again, you can kind of tell that Yuji's story is, it's interesting because it's not a remake, because this is all canon. Like, this all happened before the events of the series. But there are a lot of familiar beats where Yuji is taken under Gojo's wing, and he has to learn how to master these new powers that he has, and he makes friends with the other kids at the high school. But personality-wise, he's very, very different from Yuji. He has almost kind of like Shinji Ikari vibes. Like, he's very introverted, very kind
of... That's a good comparison for sure.
He is not the outgoing, upbeat, super optimistic shonen protagonist that maybe a lot of folks are used to.
And he's not like Todoroki, who's like kind of quiet and shy, but still got a little bit of cockiness and confidence to him. Like, Yuta is not confident, and he just seems like he's shaking all the time, in my opinion. Like,
he reminds me, like, demeanor-wise, more of Megumi, although Megumi isn't as standoff.
Megumi and Todoroki are like the same to me. Like, they're like, we don't like to talk, we don't like to say shit, but like, our silence speaks volumes. Like, with Yuta, it's like his silence is like, it almost makes you want to cringe, because you're like, you're so sad.
Right.
And like, why? Like, I mean, fragile. That's the right word. Yes.
What you were saying, though, I wanted to add on to that. We see how that fits in with the rest of the group too, right? Like, his fragile then gets him picked on by Maki almost immediately. She was like, you were bullied as a kid, weren't you? I mean, I would have bullied you. So, like, you're bullied.
Maki is amazing in this movie, to be honest. Like, she is by far, like, she actually probably was my favorite part of the movie. I thought she was amazing. Lindsay and I actually, when we first started talking after the movie, we were like, dude, Maki, like, we already knew she was a badass. But I think it was just... we got to see a definitely a more vulnerable side of her, because I think it went back into her backstory a little bit more. But also, like, you know, and Lindsay and I have been a part of a bunch of different anime podcasts where we talk about trauma, because apparently anime and trauma, like, that's just the thing. I don't know who thought, but I think it was interesting because, like, I feel like she's, I don't want to say she's like mean to Yuta or she's annoyed with him, but she just doesn't like that, like, he's been bullied and he's taken it. And she's like, that bully, being bullied has hardened me and made me want, and I mean, not to make any weird comparisons, but reminds me a lot of my brother and I. Like, we both interpret a lot of trauma, and we were only a year apart in age. And people would always be like, well, why are your personalities so different? You know, it's just like people interpret stuff differently, you know?
Right.
But I feel like she kind of picks on him because she's kind of like, dude, don't be like this, you know? But she sees a little bit of herself in him too. Sorry, I'm going to like get emotional here, but it's just like, it's a really, I really like seeing Maki, because I just felt like she was still that strong badass that we love and like absolutely goes all out. Like, she's some really epic moments where she like stands up for what she thinks is right. And again, I don't want to go into spoilers too much, but like, I was like, man, for her to stand her own against some of these villains, like, I was like, wow, like, super impressed with her. But then she had some moments with Yuta that I was like, we're soft, but also like her kind of healing and dealing with her own shit, like looking at him, you know? So anyway.
I feel like that was one of the positives of actually having the smaller cast this time. It's like, because you had Panda, who didn't really, Panda didn't get into his backstory at all during the movie. And you get that in the TV series, but you have Panda, you have Inumaki, and we find like a little bit more about his powers. And I felt like he really got to show off how they worked in this film. And then we got Maki, who really opened up to Yuta in the last portion of the film to share her, like, her family trauma and stuff with him. And that's actually more pronounced in the movie than it is in the manga. Understandable, because the creator probably hadn't like ironed all of that out yet. But, yeah. You know, we get to see how she's dealt with being an ungifted heir in this really prominent family and how that just put all this pressure on her, or she ended up kind of being neglected almost because she wasn't high achieving like they expected her to be because she didn't have these innate powers.
All the above. And I feel like also she puts a lot of pressure on herself. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, she was like, okay, like I want to take down all of you and I want to be like the best because you guys shit on me all the time. Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, so she's putting a lot of pressure on herself. And I don't know, like, honestly, in ways, I felt like it was the Maki show. You know what I mean? Like, it was, I mean, like you said, with Toge, we, like, definitely got to see, I don't know, like, he was always just weird to me, but then it made him, yeah, he's, like, cute and had some endearing moments. And then I think, like, Lindsay told me, like, jokingly, like, Panda goes, like, Super Saiyan. We see, like, another side of him, which was really fun, too. But, like, I guess just seeing, like, Maki, like, it was a very healing story for her. Like, I think that, like I said, I definitely think she saw parts of Yuta and herself. I think that you see why she puts so much pressure on herself, why she's so hard, why she's not just hard on herself, but also I think she's a little bit hard on Panda and Toge at times. And even, you know, like she got the rivalry with her sister. There's just a lot going on with her. And I think I always liked her, but I didn't love her. You know, I actually kind of liked her sister too a little bit more. Like, you know, she's got
the one with the gun.
With the guns, you know, just a little bit more. And the haircut's really badass and everything, you know. But then this made me, I was like, oh no, she's like, I almost like her better than Nobara, which I think is saying a lot, you know?
Yeah, that's
I just ship them together so I don't have to pick and I just say they're girlfriends.
Yeah, that is the ultimate, ultimate ship, 100%. Yeah. But anyway, yeah.
I think what I really loved about, speaking of everything you guys are saying about Maki and Toge and Panda, is one of the fascinating things is how, because Yuta is a perspective character, he's the one that is entering into this world kind of like Yuji did in the show, but his core friendship is with these characters that we've only really known as side characters so far.
Right.
But because he gets to know them as like intimate friends and not just as like allies in this sort of weird tournament game thing, it's so funny because I can imagine a world where the whole Jujutsu Kaisen story revolved around these characters, and it would be just as cool and just as satisfying. And earlier, Lindsay, you were saying that the side characters in this anime are so good, and I think that's my favorite thing about it, is that pretty much every side character we've met in the film and the anime could be a main character of any other given show. Like, there's...
Yeah.
And I promised myself I wouldn't make too many comparisons to a certain other worldwide smash hit that had a very popular movie recently, but... Mm-hmm. Something about Jujutsu Kaisen that stands out to me is that I don't think, like you said, I don't think there's a weak link in the cast. I don't think there's any character that I don't just love to get to spend time with, whether it's with the more emotional scenes that we get with Maki or with some of the really funny scenes between even Panda's dumb, this movie made a dumb boob joke funny to me.
Yes.
I laughed really hard when Panda was just like, hey man.
Dude, more Panda. I kind of low-key wanted it. I do want to know Panda's backstory. Because isn't, so like Gato at one point calls him like a corpse or something.
Yeah.
So
they went into it in the TV series.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping I can recall it well enough to share it. But he's kind of like a science experiment sort of situation, where there's the bear body's been infused with a real soul, right? Like
I
vaguely remember that.
Yeah, he's like a supercharged version of those little dolls that the headmaster guy does. He's just like one that's actually up and about, but he's not in the sense that other characters are. He's not like alive. I mean, even in the movie and the show, you see that like when he gets hit real hard, it's like you see stuffing, you know, he's all.
Yeah,
he's like,
right.
He's like a big old Winnie the Pooh.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So he can physically just be repaired. I don't know, like, the specifics about how you could kill him then, though. Like, there's got to be like a no return point where he can't be. Maybe you cut his head off or something. I don't know. This is kind of dark.
Maybe
I don't want Panda to die. Yeah. Yeah.
Panda. But, oh my God.
But yeah, I love it when he goes hard. We see that in the second opening sequence too, like his crazy fighting abilities.
But like his honey badger form. That's what I always think of it as. He like, turns into like a feral honey badger monster.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, just aww. Completely goes nuts. Let's talk a little bit about the main villain, Geto, who's in this. So we have seen Geto in the TV series, kind of warming up with some curses, like the guy who had a volcano for a head and stuff. We've seen him like running around with that. But this one kind of gave us a more in-depth look at what his deal is, and he's basically like a jujutsu sorcerer supremacist. He hates humans who can't use powers and calls them monkeys all the time, and thinks that jujutsu users are more evolved and should inherit the earth essentially and wipe out all the humans. So, but his powers are interesting in that like he accumulates curses and then he can deploy them out to attack on his behalf. And he's got a bunch of followers. He's kind of set himself up as
he's the Ash Ketchum of evil sorcerers.
Oh no, you did not.
I'm gonna be the yeah. Gary Oak.
You better tweet that out after yeah. this movie drops, like yeah. like legit gotta tweet that out, but yeah. sorry. Yeah
so he's just, you know, accumulating evil curses and winning, you know. He's also kind of greedy. He's running like a business where he removes curses for money, and then once you quit paying him, he stops doing it. So that's kind of like his whole bag.
Yeah, that scene was real crazy.
I talk about the one where like the guy shows up. He's like, you gotta
remove
my curses.
He's like a millionaire, and he's like, yeah. And then
he's like, no.
I'm sorry. The villains in JJK are like ridiculously scary. Yeah. Like I think that. You know, I mean, we all watch a ton of anime and there's great villains. Like Light Yagami is like, you know, obviously like legendary because he's just so charismatic and then like so evil.
Wait, I thought he was the hero. Weren't we supposed to admire and respect
him? Well, it depends on who you ask for sure. gosh. And then like recently I love like the Demon Slayer brother and sister and stuff like that, you know, mm-hmm. but like the one thing about all the JJK villains is like they are really, really scary, very unpredictable, and like really awful.
Gross.
Yeah, the zombie guy who's so for some reason low-key hot, like the Frankenstein face dude. I don't know why. I'm messed up. We won't even get into that. But like the fact that he keeps them in like little mutated forms, like in his pocket.
Oh,
like
I'm just like, that, yeah.
yeah, I'm just like, bro. And then, I mean, we didn't get into the whole, you know, Geto thing. Cause you know, for me, I told Lindsay, I'm like, okay, he's in the show now. You know what I mean? So anyway, I know we can't talk about that too much, but like he sets a whole diner on fire.
In
Do
the
you guys
show.
Remember that scene?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like he just, like, I thank you, Jim. That was my reaction. I'm like watching this. I'm like,
he's smile just on like, his face. If I
all right. Yeah. He's seriously. Like, he's like, well, I'm done with my coffee. So people crawling while their flesh is burning. Off. Like, I was like, yeah, I was just like, one thing I do have to give JJK is like, I like not hating on any of the other animes, like villains, like they're all fun, but it's just like, there is a next level of like hardcore evilness with the JJK villains. And also like one thing I do love about JJK is it is horror, you know, like even we're talking about that scene with Yuta in the beginning where like they're all like crunched up in a locker. Like I was like, oh, what the fuck? Like, did we have to see that? Like, you know, they could have just shown blood leaking out of the locker or something, you know, like it's really.
But it like peaks open, you get to kind of see the
mangledness was really horrific. Yeah,
yeah. Like he lived. I'm like,
Lindsay, I was like, when they were like, they somehow survived, I'm like, that's some anime shit right there. nobody that was like straight Danganronpa, like, you know what I mean? Like that was just like they were somehow stuffed into a little box. Like it was not no man, that's like anime. They somehow survived. Yeah like I was like, no. But like I do have to give them credit that like I was like they're really like when I was seeing how powerful he was, like I was kind of like, oh, this is really cool. Can I hate on him a little bit? Is that okay?
Yuta?
No, not Yuta. You can't hate on Yuta. He's just too sweet. on Geto.
Oh yeah.
I just feel like that whole storyline of like we're better than humans is like so played out. Like as soon as he started talking about it, I was just like, I'm sorry. Like I was like, I get it. It's a very easy storyline, you know what I mean? But it's just like, I was like, come on. Like JJK is such, the writing's always really good. So I just kind of felt like that was a cop-out to me. That if I have one gripe, like that is one I have to say.
I hope the TV series actually touches on it some more, because I feel like there's a whole thing that's like Geto and Gojo. Like backstory as students, that how did Geto get from A to B there? you know, like, because there was a point where he was friends with Gojo, and like Gojo wouldn't have been friends with him if he was like that. There has to have been, I feel like there has to be a turning point.
Actually,
he got radicalized by curse YouTube.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No. James,
they call it cursing on, and then it's
just. Yeah. Stop it.
I literally, honestly, I hate to say this. That would have been good writing, though. Yeah, they at least made it like that was how it happened. I'd be like, you know what? Relevant. Yeah. I'd be like, I can't believe this.
What is
still,
it? Some
like,
kind
very...
of sorcerer genocide? Is that what they're trying to push on us?
Oh my gosh. I can't right now. But I think that Kaji said during the interview that like Gojo actually used to be a little bit darker and like Gato was kind of like the lighter one. And then there was kind of like a role reversal. God, if I'm completely making this up, I feel terrible. But he said something like, yeah, I'm trying to block that too.
I know, right?
Yeah. But like, I thought I did. But anyway.
Yeah, they came back with another one. Yeah. Porn all in the account. It's fine.
Sorry, everybody. But I was like, well, now I really want to know more. Like, and I'm not going to lie. Like, I thought Gato's really a cool, first of all, Lex Lang. I know Lindsay listened to the sub, but I really liked his dub voice.
Okay.
Like, it was just very like charming, confident, very self-assured. Like, I don't know. You could see why all these people were following him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he just seems so convinced of his own message. You know what I mean? Like, and it was
like
a cult leader. I mean, 100%. Like, but it was like, you got why people were drinking the Kool-Aid, because it's like, he's super powerful and he's really charming and, you know, all the above. And
he's
super
cute.
Evil. He's cute. Lindsay, I wasn't going to say it because for some reason, I always think the villains are cute. And I was like, I'm just not going to say that.
I liked his ears. I thought his ears were cute. Oh, he had like the bigger earlobes. It was like a charm point for me.
It was. Yeah. Does he have like little gauges?
I don't think he had gauges. He's just.
They look
smile.
Like it though. And that's why Lindsay liked it. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Lucy's like, I'm getting Gage vibes. And he had his little headband and his man bun. He's just, yeah. Anyways, James is just smiling. He's like,
I think this show it's one of those shows where like every character to some degree or another is pretty hot. You know,
yeah.
Panda, like, there's a hottie for everyone.
Panda.
Hey, he'd be a good cuddle buddy, you know?
Yeah.
I bet he's so soft.
Next level adorable. Yeah. So next level adorable. Yeah. Anyway, so what's our overall thoughts?
I did want to talk about a little bit, like, we've got some unique characters that show up just in this, and they're, like, followers of Gato, and I kind of wish we got almost more time with them, because they were interesting, too, you know, the, like, sub-villains.
Really cool.
Like, boss villain. So we had Miguel is one, and his part in the manga is, like, hardly there, like, at all, but he has actually a really, really good fight sequence with Gojo in this.
There was really good fight. Like, yeah. I want to see this in theaters. Like, I don't know about y'all, but I watched it on my, like, computer monitor. You know what I mean? And I was just like, this is going to hit so different in a theater, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. His fight was really good.
Yeah. So we had that guy. And I thought it was also, I think he was Brazilian?
I think, yeah, something.
Yeah. I was happy to see that, though, because, I mean, we know how anime can be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was just like, okay, like, let's add a little bit of diversity here. You know what I mean? So it was nice. And I wanted to see more of him too. I'm like, okay, let's not just have him for a flash, you know, but he did have a really good fight scene. So
yeah, he had like a cat of nine tail style whip or something that was like woven that the Jujutsu sorcerers from his area, like made for him or something. I thought that was really cool. And then we also got the two schoolgirls who I thought were really funny.
They were
Nico
great.
And Nanako. And I feel like their names are actually sort of a pun that I'm not fully appreciating, but you know, one of them seemed a little more dark and the other one really wanted to go shot. I just liked the part where it seemed like even though Gato was the leader, they show up and challenge the Jujutsu high school, you know, we're gonna have this big battle or whatever, and then the other girl like approaches him while he's in the middle of like talking with Gojo and everybody else, and she's like, the store is gonna close, like we need to leave because I wanted to go get a crepe. And he's like, sorry, I have to go because the girls are telling me that the crepe store is going to close.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wish we also got to see more of them because like their interactions with and they had a set.
Can we talk about their abilities?
Yes.
Because
to hang people?
One, yeah, but one's like on a phone taking a photo. And I forgot what the other's one was. And I was like, this is so teenage culture, like it made me laugh, like because they're brutally killing people, so maybe I shouldn't be laughing, but it was like the fact, what was it, one was definitely taking a photo, Yeah. I forgot what the other ones do, but it was very like teenage, like what teenagers do.
I can't remember exactly. I just remember in the manga, she has a doll with a noose on it. And so I thought it had something, but did they change that for the movie?
I don't know if that was a part of their ability or they were just being teenagers and they were like taking photos and they were on their phone. You know what I mean? It just made me laugh that they were like gruesome, awful murderers, criminals, but then they were still like, they're like 15.
They're 15. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But they were like, okay, I'm on my phone and I'm taking photos and you're just like, oh my God, you know, they were fun. I thought they were really fun pieces.
Yeah. I thought it had a lot of really fun moments. Yeah,
we don't get as much of it in this movie, but I think to your point, Jackie, the show and the movie do a really good job of being funny and like genuinely funny. I've always really appreciated JJK's humor, and especially that it can make jokes about, I was going to say millennials, but I guess really it's more zoomers, but it has like a very millennial zoomer humor, but it never feels like it's being condescending or that it's like talking down. It always feels like, this is how we are. This is how we can.
I'm sorry. I mean, JJK's probably my favorite out of the shonens right now. You know what I mean? Like, out of Demon Slayer, My Hero Academia. I mean, I don't know. Attack on Titan's real good. But I mean, like, Lindsay and I, when we're watching it, it's just like, it somehow balances and very well, like, pacing-wise and everything, like, trauma, because anime, right? But horror and comedy, like the comedy is just like ridiculous. And I do not know how they so perfectly sprinkle in crack up hilarious moments when you see people really suffering and they're like, you know what I mean? There's these awful things happening to people, but this is somehow sprinkles in like great comedy. So it's like, for me, like that really makes it stand out. So yeah.
It's also one of the only shows.
I really like JJK's art too. Sorry.
But yes. Yeah. Oh, no. The monsters, I mean, just Rika there is just such a cool design.
So cool, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about her design a little bit because, like, she talks a little bit throughout the movie. You know, she's able to actually communicate with them. She's not just, like, a voiceless monster. But her design is really cool in that, like, she's kind of got Medusa hair sort of going on that comes back. She doesn't have any eyes. And then she's got, you know, this fangy mouth that reminds me of a deep-sea fish.
Yeah, like an anglerfish.
And then she's massive. She's huge.
But she talks still like an 11-year-old girl, which is, you know, around the age she was when she died. So she's always like, Utah, I love you. You know, like in this really like kind of cutesy voice, but she's
And when she cries, the tears like stream down those like crevices in her face. Yeah, it's just such a the show understands how to use like that uncanny horror art style, both for comedy and for horror. Like there's another bit where I think it's Geto. He like, there's like a spirit thingy and he just like pulls like a sword or a weapon or a can. He pulls something out of its mouth. And it's a small moment, but like the way that the face twists and contorts as he's just like pulling this thing that shouldn't be inside of it out of it is just such like a weird, gross, creepy moment. And I love it.
Yeah. I think the big first really big moment that was like gross in an awesome horror way is the first time Yuta goes on a jujutsu like mission, right? And he goes with Maki and they go to that elementary school because a couple kids have disappeared. And anyway, the monster that ends up showing up is huge and it's not really that scary looking, to be honest. Like it kind of reminded me of like a hamster or something. I mean, it doesn't look like a hamster, but it's roundish and big. But anyway, it eats them. And it just, you know, swallows them because, you know.
Hamster, that thing was horrific. The last thing I was thinking was a hamster. And now that you said it, I low-key am just seeing this, like, zombie, grotesque hamster. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just died thinking.
It's the first time that he summons Rika. And she just goes, like, hog wild on that thing. Like, she just destroys it. Tearing it apart, it's like it was
okay. Really that thing is like a blue goopy blob. That is not a hamster. I'm like Lindsay. I mean, I'm sorry. What's the name of the anime that has the little Hamtaro? Is it Hamtaro?
It's Hamtaro. Yeah.
So I'm literally thinking of like a Hamtaro like demon, and I'm just like, I don't know why it's just making me laugh so hard. But yeah.
Well, yes, it's true that a lot of the monsters in the show have this sort of weird balance between being cute and creepy. Like, even when they're just
for sure,
just parroting like the like the emotions or the thoughts that sort of brought them into being, just these random things like, oh, I'm so frustrated that I couldn't make it to the laundromat or something.
Yeah.
And it's very unique. I love it.
The kids, remember when the zombie Frankenstein face dude, he like sicks the children on Itadori and they're like, kill me, I want to die. And they're like running and they're like little kids with like demons. I was like, I'm
about to cry. I think I blocked that out.
Oh, like, mentally. I'm sorry that I reminded you because I literally was watching this and I was like, what is wrong with this fucking show? Like, this is too heavy. And they're like just little, they look like little kids, but their like faces were a little bit mutated and they were just like, kill me, please. And I was like,
see, that just reminds me.
Because remember, Itadori didn't want to, it's way back, but it was like he didn't want to kill the demons, you know what I mean? Because I guess like, you know, or I mean, I understand the conflict there because they're little children running at him and stuff. But again, something brilliant that JJK does. I'm going off on a tangent. I'm going to be quiet.
Sorry. The monsters are really scary though. It is definitely one of the pluses on, and I hadn't read the manga before now. And I'd always wondered like how much of the monster design was, you know, unique to the anime staff versus the manga, but the manga has a lot of the really creepy stuff in there too. So I think it originates there and they bring it to life, but yeah, definitely scary. I think one of the, maybe we can do Attack on Titan after this, but one of the things I did want to talk about is what you guys thought of Yuta and Rika's relationship in general, as far as like, cause one of the overarching themes, and I think it's Gojo that says it at first to Yuta, is that that love can be one of the biggest curses. And I thought that was a particularly like dark way to approach that. Like usually it's, you know, friendship will save us all and the power of love will, you know, defeat Queen Beryl and, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But then in this one, it's like, you can love someone too much and then, you know, they're a terrifying monster that will never let you go.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, let's sit with that for a minute.
I mean, I like that idea.
Realistic, let's be honest. Yeah. I'm like, it's true. So yeah. Sorry.
Especially for middle schoolers and high schoolers. I can definitely promise you that there is some unhealthy codependence there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my one gripe, and I agree with you, Jackie, I really appreciated seeing Geto, even though I thought that his motivation is a little bog standard. But my only other gripe with the movie, and this kind of ties into my thoughts about how Rika and Yuta's arc is handled, is that on the one hand, it was really well paced. Like it never sagged. I was never bored. But there were a few times where, even though I know this isn't the case, because it's what, like four chapters in the Tankobon format?
Yeah. It's one volume, four chapters.
Yeah, so it's only one volume, but there are still a few times in the film where it reminded me of watching one of those compilation films where they take like a season or an arc and they condense it down into a movie form, where there are some character beats and some plot developments that just kind of get like thrown in there. And it feels like something that you'd normally have a few episodes to chew on, but because it's a single movie, you got like a scene. And I think especially with Yuta and Rika's relationship, and again, not to spoil anything, but with where it eventually goes, I appreciated that the story was able to kind of tell a complete arc for Yuta. Like, I think that by the time the movie's done, he's gone through a journey and his relationship with Rika has come to a satisfying place. But I felt like I would have liked it a lot more, or I could imagine liking it more if I had like a whole 12 episodes to spend with the characters and to kind of see them get from point A to point B to point C. And some of the emotional beats didn't really hit me super hard because of that. Maybe I think that was, really my bit. Yeah. Where I was like, oh, like I appreciated it. Like I understood why the story got there. And I was like, oh yeah, this is a good place to go. I didn't really feel much of anything. Mm-hmm. And the show has done a good job of doing that. So
yeah, I agree with you. Like it almost would have been better if they made a little like mini series or something. You know what I mean? Like, or just made it a part of the next season. But it's like, I guess they just were like, okay, we don't want to, I'm sure they have their own agenda, right? But I do feel the same way. Like I wasn't able to connect with Yuta and Rika deeply. Like I thought they were cute and I like them, but I wasn't like super like emotional about them. You know what I mean? If anything, I felt like they really got me tied to Maki really well. You know yeah. what I mean? And even Toge, like, I'll be honest, during the show, I kind of like forgot about him. Like, he was just so forgettable, especially with Maki and Panda, you know, Panda, but giving it an accent there. I was just like, they're cool. But it wasn't like Rengoku and Demon Slayer. Like, I was all tears when that mofo went down. Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen that movie, that's, I don't know what to tell you. For me, it was like, I just didn't have that like much of an emotion. Like, I was like, aw, but like, it just wasn't like heavy. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Something that was in the manga that isn't in the story and isn't in the anime version at all. It's just like a little note page that's inside the volume. So it must've been just like thoughts that the creator was having while he's putting it together, but it actually made Rika's origin story, her story before she died, like creepy and darker. So she was like an orphan, essentially. Like, her mom died when she was young under mysterious circumstances. Like, that's one point that they bring up. And then later she went hiking with her dad, like several years later, and they got lost in the woods, and only she was found and her dad was never found. And so she was raised by her grandmother, and the ring that she gives Yuta, which you've seen in the promotional videos and stuff, so this is not a spoiler, but it's actually her mother's wedding ring that she like stole off her grandma's like dresser or something. But it also hints that her grandmother has always thought that she killed both of her parents.
Well, yeah, that's definitely,
yeah. No, I mean, that's all valid, and it's all like, damn, that's really heavy, you know.
And that's something like that also I feel like could have been worked in as like a backstory, like if we had known more about Rika and like maybe that she wasn't responsible for either of them, but now she's living in a home where she's blamed for the deaths of her parents. And that's because it's said like she met Yuta in the hospital. Again, I don't think this happens or is shown in the anime, but she meets him in the hospital after she's found, I think, from being out in the woods. And he was recovering from pneumonia. So he was just like, you know, had like a regular illness or whatever. That's actually how they met, was in the hospital. But yeah, I felt like some of that could have been worked in to kind of create a fuller version of Rika, at least.
See, like, know? That's an amazing backstory that was like so lightly touched on. I didn't even really remember it. Like, when you said it, I was like, oh yeah. But then it was like just not given its proper time. You know what I mean? Which is understandable because the movie, you know, it's a movie. It's not an anime series, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so they only have so much time. And again, these were notes on a page. This wasn't even like drawn into the manga itself at all either. It was just in between chapters, here's a page that's got a picture of Rika, and then it's got like six bullet points on it with some factoids, and those were in there.
Interesting. I love when manga does that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, we're just gonna add in this little like chart or this thing and then just not reference it, but it gives you a lot, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the movie a lot. I thought it was fun. I don't think it was the best. Like, I think like, it's not like, I'm like, oh, that's the best anime movie I've ever seen. But I was like, should people go see it? Is it the characters that you love doing really cool things? Yep. Very fun.
I mostly agree with that. James, do you think like JJK watchers should see this? People who haven't watched JJK should see this, or?
Yeah, totally. I think, I agree with you guys that I don't think it's not going to change anyone's life. It's basically more Jujutsu Kaisen, but with a slightly different framework for the story. But that said, I mean, I love Jujutsu Kaisen. And I think anyone that does like Jujutsu Kaisen is going to get a kick out of it. And like we were saying earlier, I think because it's a prequel, but it wasn't written to be a prequel. It was written to be its own story. And it just kind of so happened to grow into this bigger thing. And I think that actually helps it out because it doesn't feel like, where a lot of prequels, I think, sort of fall into that trap of just, we're going to explain how this character got this thing, or we're going to show you when, you know, it becomes fan service. And this actually felt like a full, complete story that even if you've never seen an episode of JJK, you can enjoy it. And so I think as just an entry point for fans, I think it's really, really solid.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and have a word from our sponsor. And then we're going to talk a little bit about all the crazy crap that happened in Attack on Titan this week. So we'll be right back.
Now for a quick word from our sponsors.
Quest, thirsty skin and leave it feeling satin smooth with Wang Melrose Place Body Cream. It's fast absorbing to nourish your skin when you need it most. Hydration that lasts, preventing dryness. And it's high quality, nourishing ingredients like squalene, coconut oil, kupuasu butter, and coconut oil. And turn your shower into an escape with the gentle skin softening Wang Melrose Place Body Cleanser. It balances your skin without stripping it or leaving unwanted residue, gently cleanses and nourishes at the same time with a luxurious lather. There's skin softening oils in a hydrating blend and also high quality nourishing ingredients like jojoba seed oil and rose hip oil. All right, to experience the new Wang Melrose Place Body Cream and Body Cleanser, your body, your way, go to theouai.com and use the code BLEAV, BLEAVE, to get 15% off your entire purchase. That's 15% off your entire order at theouai.com, code BLEAVE. So go over there now.
All right, welcome back. We're here to talk about Attack on Titan this week. I wish they had an official title for their like new formed group, Levi and the Gang.
Levi and the Gang, stop.
I don't know. What would be a good name?
That's a Sad Squad. That's kind of where they're at.
Sad Squad. I believe Sad Squad. Yeah, they got to get on that flying boat, guys. They got to get there so that they can stop the rumbling.
Now, I don't know why they'd want to stop the rumbling. It's a hit song. It's probably one of the more popular anime OPs that's come out recently.
Oh, that's true. We have an interview with the band.
I'm going to be honest.
Okay. Are you ever not?
I know, right? Like, I hate that I say that. I always preface everything, but like, I'm going to be honest. And then everyone's like, when are you not?
So, when are you lying?
Yeah, I know, right? So then I didn't really understand what their plan was. And then when it started to play out, I was like, oh, this just got really cool. You know what I mean? Like, cause I didn't know, I don't know if they explained it in detail and I just wasn't really paying attention. But then like when Armin was like, oh, Flock, this is all happening. They're like swimming and they're over there. And then I was like, man, this is happening really fast. And it's a lot of moving parts. And if I'm Flock, like, I'm like, oh shit, that is kind of a big deal. And I want the glory of bringing them down. And then like when they're talking to Samuel and I forgot the name of the other guy, but Dez. They're having that Dez and they're having that interaction with them. Like I was like sweating. Cause I was like,
you're like them right here. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Cause I'm like, are they going to pull like, and Armin was like, maybe we can pull this off with like no casualties, which
right. We can just steal the boat.
And we knew that wasn't going to go down, but for some reason in my heart, I really just wanted it to somehow work. You know what I mean? Well, I was kind of like, oh shit. Like I'm really liking this plan. You know what I mean? Like, and I was really invested in it. Of course, you know, it didn't work, but yeah,
well, I thought they were going to pull it off, man. I really did. And then,
that's what he gets.
His teeth
were blown out. It was so bad. I mean, it was so bad.
I hate to say this, but I used to work in TV news and I worked in New Orleans and there was a lot of brutal crime there. And there was like a shooting on Bourbon Street and someone got shot in through the cheek just like this. Yeah. And they were talking, you know, obviously it's a court case. So they're talking about how horrific it is. And they were talking about all the dental surgery that this poor woman had to go through. I mean, I don't like teeth stuff. I don't like nail stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I was so triggered by this image and then him coming up and it's just like the shattered, and we know he's going to live because he's a colossal titan. But it was just, I was like, when he's like face to face with Dez, I think like, I was like, oh, I know.
He was like climbed on top of him. And then it's just like, got like, his bloody mouth the whole time. Yeah.
I don't think, I mean, maybe some people realize, but like that is a brutal injury. I mean, it wouldn't have been fatal for him anyways, because he's like a titan, but it was just like, that is like a really brutal injury. Like, the titans can feel the pain though, right?
I think so. Yeah.
So I was like, for him to just be like crawling around and his teeth are literally falling out of his face. Like, I was just like,
I feel so bad for Connie, but I felt really bad for him. Just on top of everything that he's been through already. I mean, he already, you know, maybe was going to sacrifice a young boy to his mom and let her eat him. And then
by making the little boy brush the mom's teeth.
And then, you know, and then he basically comes to terms with the fact that, like, he's not going to do that, and then go into here, and they're going to pull off this heist. They're going to steal this boat and maybe also free some Ozma Beato mechanics at the same time. And then Armin gets fucking shot in the face, so Connie's got to pop a guy. He's got to pop two guys. Bang, bang. Like,
his friends.
He's like, I know. And he's just like crying because he's got to kill them because otherwise the world's going to end.
I'm not going to lie. That was a that was a really tough scene to watch. It was like, I don't know if you guys knew Samuel and Dez. I didn't remember them, but it was we didn't have to. Like, it was just like, you knew that they probably grew up in, like, around each other, right? Probably saw each other, definitely saw each other when they were going through training, you know?
Yeah.
And then it was like their friends were like, man, they're saying these really awful things about you guys, but, like, I don't want to believe them, you know? And then they believe them, and then all that hell breaks loose. And I was just like, oh no, you know? And I'll be honest, I didn't know I didn't think Connie was going to do what he did. I think I was like, you see Armin's wheels start turning, you know, because he thinks of Berthold, which, by the way, I love any Berthold flashback. I love Berthold so much. So when it flashes back to Berthold and he's like, someone has to have this blood on their hands.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I was going to compare it to Gungrave, but I'm not. I won't do that to you, Lindsay. But there is some epicness about, you know, sometimes people need to get their blood on their hands because they care about others. And that was 100% what Connie did in that moment. But it was interesting just because I don't think Connie by any means is weak. Like, he's always been a strong character, a little mouthy, a little Bakugo-ish, right? But we've never seen him do anything like, I mean, we've seen him go through a lot of shit, but we just haven't seen like that big sacrifice or that like really awful moment with him. I mean, obviously, like, the whole thing with his mom, like, they've all been through shit, right? But we haven't seen anything like at this level for Connie. And so for him to be like, you know what? I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to kill our friend here because I can't let Armin die. And there's just this bigger cause. And then you're like, you want to be kind of mad at Connie, but then you're just like, what else is he going to do in this situation? Yeah. Like, he's trying to save his friends. He's trying to thwart this mass genocide. And it's just like, it just makes you so sad and cringe. Like, the one great thing, I mean, if you can even say it's a great thing, but Attack on Titan makes you just realize like how awful war is, right? Because it's just like, these were two of their friends, and two of their friends like just chilling, watching the boat, like probably just got assigned to it, like, you know what I mean, whatever. And then like they just got caught up in a really bad situation. He had to literally fight them and kill them, like brutally fight with them, not just you know, like, it wasn't like rock paper scissors. Like, this was like a very physical, very emotional battle. And I actually really liked the animation in this episode because they were showing them sweaty and panicked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you could see that they were in a state of fight or flight, and they weren't like, and even though they're trying to remain calm to make this whole plane go off, like, I think it was kind of like, this is what they're feeling on the inside. Like, I felt like it probably wasn't coming out as much on the outside as it was visually, but it just like was really hitting me because you could feel how stressed they were and how torn they were, you know? And I thought the animation did like a really good job of that. But I think I was shocked Connie was the one to shoot them.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be Armin because he made the big speech about, you know, that he wasn't going to stand by. And it's Flock's fault, right?
Everything is Flock's fault. That's what, if we've learned anything.
Despicable,
He ruins everything. Oh.
He was gonna kill the leader of the Ozma Beato, and the only reason, like, she didn't end up killed was because, and Mikasa was able to save her, was because of Armin and Connie kind of sounding an alarm when he realized that they were full of crap. But God, someone just needs to, you know, throw him in a river.
Yeah, can we shoot him? I'm sorry, that's like really brutal to say, but I'm just like, he can't survive that, right?
Right.
He would have been steamed, right?
I think he's alive. He's like a cockroach. You can survive.
Yeah, he's a cockroach. I was like, because they kind of buy him, and I was like, shit, is he going to get steamed to death? Like, I was kind of like hoping they would show him, but they didn't. So I was like, oh, by the way, seeing Annie back in action. Jesus. I'm sorry.
Was that cool?
Did that not feel so fucking good?
She
love her.
She like high kicked three people out of the air and like smashed them with their feet.
Mister.
Like,
yeah.
It's so funny because so much of the violence in this episode is, like Jackie was saying, just brutal and bad and uncomfortable. But I would be lying to your face if I said that I wasn't kind of excited to watch Reiner.
Yeah, Annie, you were giddy. Like, yeah. She like kick them, mash them, and you're like, yeah, like, she's back. And I love Reiner too. So just seeing both of them. And also when they crossed by walk, and I was like, let's go. But I'm not gonna lie, I heard that the ending of this is like very polarizing and divisive, you know, like we've talked about this numerous times, but like seeing the old crew back together, minus Sasha, rip, we miss her, but it's like, it's very like cool to see them back in action together. It's like, it's just hitting the nostalgia feels like really hard, you know?
Was Armin transforming at the end there too?
Or no, he was, I think he's just healing.
I'll be honest. I was a little surprised he didn't.
Yeah, he kill them all. They'd all die if he transformed.
And I thought maybe he was worried about destroying the boat.
Yeah,
so that was why. But I was kind of like, because you know, if he, I mean, like you said, he's so massive. Though you're right. It probably would have just like
is okay. So Lindsay strategizing as though she has any control over this show. So Armin, if he transformed, would he be about the same size as the? As the rumbling titans?
Yeah.
What if he transformed and then carried all of them and then just walked there in the same direction as all the other titans are going?
Well, they're all underwater. Like they're walking on the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, so, really? Okay. Yeah. I didn't think of that. Okay. Yeah, that would make sense that they're not taller than the depths of the ocean. Maybe they're doggy paddling though.
Maybe I don't know. When they said they were crossing, I thought they were like swimming too or something, Lindsay, so
nah, they were just walking. But it is weird that one of the things about this episode that I wasn't a huge fan of, if only because I never like it when you're just supposed to sort of take a character's word for something really important. But when they just kind of casually mention, oh, and the rumbling's definitely already hit Marley by now, so the world's already being destroyed. And I was like, right. Already? Oh, crap. I thought we would have, like, seen that. Like, okay.
Yeah, they haven't done any cutaway to, like, the Titans landing, like, hitting land or anything like that, right?
No. So, it's I think it's Hanji, I think, that says, yeah, I saw the steam, and so I did some mental math, and they're definitely destroying Marley already. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
Like, yeah, so. They said that. They said they started, like, hammering on the outskirts of the city or whatever, so.
Yeah, like Hanji said, they figured out the speed that they were going and then was calculating from that or something. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I guess, sure.
I guess. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I ain't gonna check the math here. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
So the big question for me is like, what's gonna happen now? Like, so they're just gonna try to kill all of the Jaegerists and then try to get the flying. I mean, I guess we technically have I'm not going to say this right. Azumabito, is that how you say it?
Azumabito. Yeah, Azumabito. Yeah.
They're holed up, right? They're kind of trapped, for lack of a better word.
Yeah,
but also protected, right? And so, I mean, yeah, are they just going to kill all the Jaegerists and then get them out and get them on the boat and then like head on over there? I mean, that's essentially the plan now at this point, now that things went haywire, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming, is that they're somehow going to get Azumabito that are in the basement with Mikasa, right? Mm-hmm. Mikasa's down there with them. So they have to regroup with her.
Leader, the Cart Titan leader, the Marleyan, I forgot his name.
Oh.
Who broke Yelena's arm?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he did.
He's like, I'm about to give you another elbow. I was like, damn.
And then he did.
The only thing that bothered me about that scene though was like, he's holding her mouth and he's like, tell me. I'm like, she can't talk, dude. I was like, she can't talk.
All squished.
Yeah. I was like,
I'm not pro torture by any means, but at the same time, I didn't hate seeing Yelena get her arm broken. I was like,
she's so unlikable. She's like right up there with Flock. It's kind of hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't that scene MO, with him though.
Was great though. That the scene with Magath at the beginning when he had his come to Jesus moment. I was like, sorry about the racism, guys.
Sorry, that was my bad. That was just a very quick summary of that. But yes, essentially.
Yeah.
You know what? Yelena had a really good line though when she looks at Levi and she's like, you just can't take the violence out of the humans or something. Or you just can't take the violence out of them or something. That got me. Okay. I know. And he's just like, I'm not even going to address that. But it's like, it's true. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, they did try to do it peacefully, but it's just kind of like, and I think deep down we knew it wasn't going to go down that way. You know what I mean? But it's just like, I feel it's so sad that so much of Attack on Titan, and someone like jokingly said like Armin got shot in the mouth when all he wants to do is talk things out. And so literally like he wasn't able, and I almost think they did that on purpose. Like he wasn't able to calm them down, which he is very good at doing. I mean, hello, he convinced everybody that Aaron was a good boy. He was like, you guys, he still loves us. He's still our best friend. I was like, what's happening here? But anyway, yeah, I'm going off on a tangent here, but it is just like interesting how it just seems like it always ends up turning to violence, even when they want it to not be. But that again is just like kind of war, you know, kind of war. I mean, it is.
Yeah, that was Margaret. You know? That was Margaret's whole point in that speech she had, was how, you know, they realized that, oh yeah, asking Armin and Connie and them to murder their friends is probably, that sucks. And so I guess we can do that. And for once, he's not like, you know, he's not talking them down. He's not belittling them. He's saying, look, I want more than anyone for this violence to stop. And I think the only way for it to stop is if we're honest with ourselves. And I did appreciate, because we talked a while ago about kind of the weird kind of war crime apologism overtones that some of the previous episodes had. And Margaret explicitly says, we can't deny those things. We have to teach people what happened.
Yes, we have to teach people what we did.
Mm-hmm. That's the only way to prevent it from happening in the future. That being said, your crazy friend is genociding the planet, and in order to stop that, we might have to murder some people. And like you said, Jackie, like that just sucks. Like there's no good way out of this anymore. There's no clean way to save the
world. And Connie came to that realization too. Like they were like, hey, like we're friends. We're trying to talk this out with y'all. And then he was like, blow up the boat, you know. And then they're like all fighting, and Connie's just like, this is just not going to end well. You know what I mean? Like there's no way to not. I mean, and maybe some way they could have wrestled them, you know what I mean? It's just like Connie just saw the writing on the wall, you know what I mean? But then it's like, who actually has the audacity to pull the bullet on that? Like, you know what I mean? It was very great writing, I think, in my opinion, that you see the wheels turning in Armin's head. Yeah. But then it shows the trigger just got pulled a little bit faster in Connie. So we don't see what's going on in Connie's head, right? So we're like, all the buildups with Armin, right? And we're seeing Bertholdt being like, someone needs to have blood on their hands. And you're like, oh my God, what the fuck's about to go down? And then it's Connie who does it.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good writing,
if Hanji's right, every second they waste is like the world is being destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, that, like too, the Titans are, they're marching on the world. And so it's one of those things too, where like Connie, I think, realizes like, we can't afford to waste another 20 seconds. Like every second we waste is like another village that gets destroyed. Like we have to move.
No. So what do you guys think next episode is probably mostly, I think it's mostly going to be dealing with Flock and like getting the boat off the ground and then probably maybe making it. I don't think they'll make it to Marley until like the episode after next, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess.
I mean, how many episodes do we have left? Because is it two now? Like, I feel like we're getting really close.
I'm constantly thinking about this and always losing count.
I know, Lindsay, it's so funny. I will think about it and I'll be like, I got to Google that. And then I'll like get distracted by something, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's getting really close. So like, Alex.
Well, it's because we're in the 80s for the episode count. So it's hard to like break it down into the usual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks like we have two. Yeah.
So it's like,
This is wrapping up in two episodes.
There's no way. It's going to have a movie. Is going to have a movie. I mean, look at what happened with Demon Slayer. They broke all these records. Look what happened with Broly. What's going to happen with Jujutsu Kaisen? There's a new Dragon Ball movie out. Everybody knows, where do you make that money in the Western world? You know, it's with a great anime movie. And I'll be in cosplay sitting there. I'll be like, let's go. But yeah, there's definitely going to be a movie. This ain't wrapping up anytime soon.
No.
And it's going to end on a stupid cliffhanger and then make us wait a year, if not more.
It'll be unbearable.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, though? And I think we've all talked about this to an extent. And I talk about it with like other anime fans all the time. But it's like, the beauty of anime is that like, it does keep you hanging on. You know, like it's like we hate it, but then we love it. And then we have great conversations about it, because like Netflix drops anime
all in one package. And they obviously, they tried to change it up with, what do you call it, with Jolynn Cujo, right?
Yeah.
But even then it was like dropping them in those big packs. It's still like, it, like that was a great anime. Like that was really fun to watch, but it's just like, the buildup is so much bigger when we're looking forward to it once a week. And yeah, they killed Dorohedoro. I don't even want to talk about that because that is an anime that it was just so overlooked because they just dropped it, didn't really promote it that well. And it is literally like amazing, like such a good anime.
Jackie has two modes and it's either yelling about Dorohedoro or gushing about Gungrave.
Gungrave. That is really, that's about it. Yeah. James already knew the anime. He was like, or Gungrave. But yeah, I mean, like, it's like, I will be obviously annoyed if it ends in a cliffhanger, but if they have an amazing movie and I'm just crying the whole time in the movie theater, like that'll be, and there's epic battles, which we already see in the show. Like that'll be pretty cool. Like that'll be a great ending, you know, or at least I hope so. But
yeah. And if it gives the studio time to make the anime under halfway reasonable conditions too, like if that extra year is the difference between like a bunch of people going home with like permanent, like physical maladies, then I would, I'll wait a year. That's fine.
Or episodes filled with tree branches.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Wait, well, yeah, I mean, Lindsay, what's this upcoming season has like the most freaking premieres ever. So it's not like we have a dearth of anime to watch.
Oh my God. Okay. So, yeah, that makes a good segue for us. So we're going to be coming up, not next week, but in 2 weeks, we will be hosting the trailer watch party. It'll be March 25th, which is a Friday at 6 p.m. And Jeff Thew, known Mother's Basement, is joining us this time to watch all the trailers for the spring anime season. And I did the counting, and there is about 45 new shows premiering in April. 45. It is insane. I'm not happy about it from a work standpoint.
We're gonna die.
Die. I mean, we die and resurrect every 3 months around here, but
it's true.
Yes, there's about 45 shows. We're going to watch all the trailers for it. We've already got a placeholder where you can wait. You can just keep it open in a tab for 2 weeks if you want to, make sure you don't forget, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I've looked over the shows and there's a lot of variety sports. There's quite a few sports. There's quite a few isekai. There's some that I'm really looking for.
I'm going to throw up. So over that genre. I'm just like, yo. Anyway, sorry.
You don't want to go to another world, Jackie?
No, I'm just so like that. I'm not going to lie. Low-key annoys me. Like, and that is another reason why I really, really like JJK, because it's like, yes, it's, you know, it's very shonen, right? Like they're in high school, whatever, but I just feel like they've put such a unique twist on it. I'm just like, I don't know, like all the isekais are just very similar to me, and someone might be able to find a recommendation and totally change my mind, but it's just like, I feel like I'm always watching the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, like
one thing you should be watching, it's not isekai, it is based on a light novel series that you would like, is Sabakui Bisco.
The mushroom.
We have, what do you call it? I've seen us, we've had like articles and stuff on it.
Yeah.
It's a mushroom.
Yeah. Yes, there's mushrooms in it.
Hold on. We talk about how I gush about Gungrave or complain about Dorohedoro. Lindsay, anything that has to do with a mushroom is like Lindsay's talking about.
Have you seen my new rug, Jackie? I should send you a picture of it.
You
got a rug?
Show it on the show next time. I'm sure it's a giant mushroom.
Yes.
The Townsend's YouTube channel did a whole thing on like the specific kind of mushroom. It was like a 15-minute video, and all I could think about was I need to send this to Lindsay because it's gonna be like her favorite thing.
That's all people send me on social media. They'll see like a mushroom thing, they'll be like, Lindsay.
Why are mushrooms very cute but also very scary? Because in Dorohedoro, I found those mushrooms, because obviously the villain's like ability is turning people into mushrooms, and it was literally the most frightening thing ever.
Yeah. That's because, I'm just quoting a Tumblr post, but that's because decay is just an extant form of life, Jackie.
Yeah, it is. It's the decay.
You can't kill mushrooms in a way that matters. Yeah. They'll just come back.
I'm sorry. Mushrooms are weird. Don't judge me.
For those of you that are audio only, there is a twinkle in Lindsay's eyes that I would describe as
scary.
If you go to Oregon, the largest living organism by weight is a mushroom colony in Oregon that spans like over 10 acres, I think. It's just all under there, one giant mushroom organism.
I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that ever.
X-Files episode about it too.
I don't want to see that ever. Also, Lindsay, someone just said The Last of Us Zombies.
Right. I know.
That is, oh my God. Did you guys play The Last of Us 2?
I did.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
Lindsay, you would.
I probably would watch a Let's Play.
I am shook right now.
I'm really bad at first-person shooters.
But play it on easy and okay. Like, I'm telling you right now, the story, you're going to love the story. But okay. They have like these, they added like a new monster and it's like this big fat, like they're already kind of fungusy looking, but there was this big giant fungus dude. It's really, yeah. And he just explodes. Like it's just
nice.
Like, but you would love it. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways.
All right. So yes, make sure to tune in for the spring trailer watch party, March 25th, 6 p.m. We'll also be back next Monday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern to continue talking about Attack on Titan. I think James will be out because he's going on a vacation with the health. So
how dare you leave us?
Suffering in Disney World. It's going to be the worst. God, just going on all those rides.
But yeah, we're here. Jackie, James, and me, we're here every week. Talking about latest anime stuff, anime news, all that sort of stuff. So be here or otherwise you're lame, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I'm just going to end on that. Bye, everybody.